Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the one, the only Sean Sports Stop podcast. That's right, the grind doesn't stop. It is currently 6:41 a.m. Pacific time here. And I will say, the beautiful Los Angeles, California, even though we are in the middle of a historic storm, I should correct myself. We are much closer to the end of it than the beginning. Today is the last day of rain, but as you can probably hear, it is raining. I'm currently inside my car, but no complaints. In fact, everything's beautiful. Life is beautiful. And with that said, we have no time to waste. We are going to get right into it, starting with NBA power rankings. We are under a week. Not only are we under a week, we are only 2 days away from the 2024 NBA trade deadline. The Los Angeles Lakers have been in a lot of trade rumors. DeJounte Murray, will it be Dorian Finney-Smith or Spencer Dinwiddie? There have been lots of rumors. In the summer, it could be someone like a Trae Young or a Donovan Mitchell. Of course, other teams are involved in rumors as well. But here are my pre-trade deadline NBA power rankings. Starting off with the Charlotte Hornets, they're 10-36. They were 30 in my previous rankings. They're suddenly dealing with another extended absence for LaMelo Ball, which probably isn't the worst news for the organization at the moment, and that is saying something. No, you never want your star player to be hurt, but LaMelo's absence will likely add to the loss column in an already lost season. That's now about draft lottery odds. Without him, rookie Brandon Miller has had a bit more opportunity to shine as well. Next up, we got the Detroit Pistons, who are 6-41. They were 29th in my last rankings as well. After missing 8 straight games in mid-January, Cade Cunningham has now played in 2 of the Detroit Pistons' last 3, and somehow they won the game that he sat in the middle of those 3. The Pistons have generally been better with the 22-year-old on the floor over the course of his career, so a solitary win without him doesn't raise any alarm bells, but a third straight season with well below average scoring efficiency perhaps might. All the typical caveats about his supporting cast not taking much pressure off him apply. But at a certain point, he has to start making shots. After a solid 8 of 16 night in Wednesday's loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers, Cunningham is up to 44.9% shooting, but only 34.3% from 3. Both numbers are below average. Next up, the San Antonio Spurs at 10-38, previously 27th, so they go down one spot. Victor Wembanyama's acclimation to the NBA game is happening far more rapidly than even the most optimistic fans could have thought. I'm very surprised. With his recent play, there's an argument that the 20-year-old has been one of this season's top 30 to 40 players, and he might even have a fringe all-star injury replacement case, assuming that he's needed, you know, in the first place. After going for 21 points and 5 blocks in Wednesday's loss to the Orlando Magic, Wemby is now averaging over 24 points, 9.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, and 3.5 blocks in only 26.5 minutes a game over his last 16 games. Washington Wizards, they swapped spots with the Spurs. They are at 27, previously at 28, with a record of 9-38. By 2023-24 Washington Wizards standards, this week was a rousing success. They beat tanking contemporaries in both the Detroit Pistons and San Antonio Spurs, and both games were on the road, before closing out the week with a respectable loss to the surging Los Angeles Clippers. And during this mini run, point guard Tyus Jones is putting up a should entice teams in need of a backup one stat line of over 10 points, 8.3 assists, and under 2 turnovers a game. Despite all this season's losses, Washington has a handful of veterans, including Jones and Kyle Kuzma, who they should trade away. Portland Trailblazers have consistently been at 26. They are 15-33. Seasons at the outset of a rebuild can feel pretty rough, so it's worth celebrating the occasional wins that come along. This week brought some for the Portland Trailblazers, who beat the Milwaukee Bucks on Wednesday in Damian Lillard's return to the Motor Center. It also featured some slightly better play from Scoot Henderson, who's otherwise been historically bad as a rookie. He's averaging 12 points while shooting 40.7% on twos and only 30.9% from three. He also has an uninspiring 1.5 assist to turnover ratio. Among the 943 three-point era rookies with at least 1,000 minutes, Henderson's minus 6.9 box plus minus ranks 941st. So only 2 rookies in the three-point era out of 943 have been worse. His minus 2 is considered replacement level or a bench player. But over his last 10 games, Henderson is at 13.1 points with a 36.4 three-point percentage and a minus 2.6 box plus minus. Even if it's incremental, that is progress. And again, being in the position that the Blazers are in, they should be happy with that. Memphis Grizzlies at 25. They're 18-30. They were previously 24, so they go down a spot. If this season didn't already feel like a gap year for the injury-riddled Memphis Grizzlies, it certainly does after Thursday. Prior to a loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers that night, Woj of ESPN reported that Memphis was sending veteran and injured center Steven Adams to the Houston Rockets for Victor Oladipo, who isn't playing, and 3 second-round picks. Thanks to Taylor Jenkins' coaching and the ascendance of Vince Williams Jr. and G.G. Jackson, the Grizzlies will continue to be competitive on plenty of nights, but the countdown to 2024-25 must be on for Memphis fans missing Ja Morant. The Brooklyn Nets, they swapped spots with the Grizzlies. They are 19-28. Ben Simmons made his long-awaited return to action on Monday and looked borderline spectacular in a win over the Utah Jazz. In only 18 minutes, he totaled 11 assists, 10 points on 5-of-5 shooting, 8 rebounds, a steal, and a block. And when he was on the floor, it was easy to get excited about the prospect of a transition attack led by him. Prior to Brooklyn's next game, though, news broke that Simmons was out again, yet again, this time with a knee injury. He's made only 7 appearances this season, and the prospect of him ever being healthy for an extended stretch feels more outlandish with each passing week. Toronto Raptors at 17-30. They were previously 22, so they go down a spot. Thanks to a veteran-heavy starting five that included Bruce Brown and Dennis Schroeder, the Toronto Raptors closed the week with a win over the Chicago Bulls, and the front office should maybe hope that this is the start of a turnaround. They've lost 9 of 10 prior to Tuesday's win, and if their 2024 draft pick lands in the top 6, they keep it. Right now, they have the 6th worst record in the NBA. If that pick stays with them, they'd be playing for the same game of roulette in 2025, which is the stronger draft class. Long story short, they might rather finish with a draft pick outside the top 6, which would be moved to the San Antonio Spurs. Then the 2025 pick is in the clear. Ensuring they're outside the top 6 means Toronto might need to keep those veterans to compete for wins. Atlanta Hawks, 20-27, previously 23, so they go up a spot. The incessant trade rumors probably aren't going anywhere, but back-to-back wins over the Raptors and Lakers to close the week has to feel all right for the Hawks. If you extend the touchback, you know, a little bit further, Trae Young's play since returning from injury has to be a little encouraging for whatever's left of the team after the deadline. In 3 games since coming back from a concussion, he's put up 28.7 points, 12 assists, and 3 threes a game. Atlanta hasn't really done it yet, but there's surely some way to field a contender, or at least a borderline contender, around an offensive engine as high octane as Trae Young. Next are the Chicago Bulls, who stay at number 21 spot at 23-26. They started the season 5-14, and they've seemingly been clawing back to get back to 500 ever since. This week, they got closer to their goal as they went 2-1 with 2 wins on the road, and adding a little more evidence to Kobe White's most improved player case. After he put up 35 points and 9 in a win over the Charlotte Hornets on Wednesday, he's averaging 19 points and over 5 assists, up from only 9.7 and 2.8 a season ago. If he keeps this up and the Bulls stay in the hunt for a 500 record and a play-in spot, he has an outside shot at the award. He's currently tied for the 3rd shortest odds on FanDuel. Next up, the Utah Jazz at 24-26, previously 17, so they went down 3 spots. Lauri Markkanen was one of this week's all-star snubs, and he followed that news with a 28-point, 10-rebound showcase in a national TV game against the Philadelphia 76ers on Thursday. He was a +1 for the game, but the Utah Jazz lost, and their hot streak in December and January is starting to feel like a very distant memory. They've now lost 6 of their last 8, and it's firmly back in the bottom 10 in net rating. Perhaps they should be looking at trades for guys like Kelly Olynyk and or Jordan Clarkson. Golden State Warriors, 20-24, so they went up a spot. It's been a difficult January for the Warriors, but they closed it out with an encouraging win over the Sixers, which Steph Curry poured in 37 points on 12 of 17 shooting. He hit 8 threes and handed out 7 assists. They're starting to get some consistency out of Jonathan Kuminga as well. After he scored a 26 on 11 of 19 shooting against Philly, he's now averaging over 25 points, 7 rebounds, 2 threes, and a steal over his past 7 games. If he can maintain production anywhere near this level, Brandon Podziemski continues to develop, and old standbys like Draymond Green and Klay Thompson continue to play like they did in January. Thompson averaged 20 points and shot 40.5% from 3, while Draymond averaged 8 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals, and a block. There's still an outside shot that the Warriors could make the playoffs. Next up, the Houston Rockets at 22-25. They went up 1 spot. They may have a below 500 record, but they still rank in the top half of the league in net rating thanks to a very good defense. And if Jalen Green keeps playing like he has lately, the Rockets may start to make some noise on the other end as well. they, you know, may start to make some noise on the other end as well. Over his last five games, Green is averaging 30 points, 4 assists, and over 3 threes a game. And while Houston is 2-3 in those games, it's plus 21 in his minutes. Next up, we got my Los Angeles Lakers at a very mid 25-25. Previous rating was 18, so they go up one spot. They have a net rating of negative 1.3. A loss to the Boston Celtics almost felt like a foregone conclusion for the Lakers on Thursday. The game was in Boston. LeBron James and Anthony Davis were not playing. The Boston Celtics are the best team in the NBA, and the Boston Celtics had a record at home of 22-2 coming into this matchup. They were favored by 15 points on sportsbooks and in Vegas. And of course, Boston led the league in net rating and winning percentage as well. But LeBron and AD's supporting cast played an inspired game, especially on defense. I mean, you know, to hold off that Celtics offense, you know, is very, very impressive, I would say. Especially, I mean, they already had a loaded team before with the likes of Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, you know, Derek White, guys like that. But then they add Kristaps Porzingis and Jrue Holiday. I mean, wow, what a team on paper they have, and on the court too. All year, LeBron and AD have played like top 10 players, but they've needed more help from the rest of the roster. If Austin Reeves, who went off, you know, with 32 points on 10 of 18 shooting on Thursday, and D'Angelo Russell, 24.4 points and 6.8 assists over his last 11 games, can maintain their recent level of play, there's still plenty of time for a Lakers deep playoff run. Next up, one of the biggest surprises in the NBA this season, the Orlando Magic at 25-23. Previously 16, so they're holding strong in that spot. For the second season in a row, Paolo Banchero has been one of the league's least efficient high-volume scorers, but an extended absence from his number 2 or 1B had something to do with that. During the 8 games Franz Wagner missed in January, Banchero shot 39.9% from the field and only 23.5% from 3. That is horrible. In the 6 games since Wagner has been back, Banchero is averaging 25.3 points, while shooting 47.7% from the floor and 40% from three. Much, 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 obviously, better. Let's see. If he can stay anywhere near the second level for the remainder of the season, the Magic might be able to push out of the league's bottom 10 on offense. Next up, the Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving-led Dallas Mavericks at 26-22. They are maintaining the spot at number 15. They have a net rating of negative 0.4. On Friday, Luka Doncic tied Will Chamberlain and David Thompson for the fourth highest single-game point total in the history of the NBA when he dropped 73 on the team that drafted him and then traded him for Trae Young, the Atlanta Hawks. And that game was sandwiched between 3 games of at least 33 points the week before and a 45-point, 15-assist masterpiece on Monday. After the absurd stretch where he averaged 41 points, 12 assists, and over 11 rebounds over his last 6 appearances, Doncic missed Wednesday's game with a sprained ankle, and the Mavs were blown out by the Minnesota Timberwolves. And all of the above sort of sums up this Mavericks season. The 5-time All-Star has to be available and sensational for his team to compete. Game score provides, quote, a rough measure of a player's productivity for a single game, and Doncic is 5th in the NBA with performances that added up to at least a 30-game score behind Nikola Jokic of the Nuggets, Joel Embiid of the Sixers, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander of the Thunder, and Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Bucks. Dallas is 10-3 in those games and 16-19 in every other game this season. The Miami Heat at 25-23, previously 13, so they go down a spot. Prior to beating the Sacramento Kings on Wednesday, the Miami Heat lost 7 straight, which was their longest losing streak since all the way back to 2008. And while it probably feels nice to at least momentarily get off, you know, get the pressure off a little bit, the win did come against a below average defense, and questions about Miami's offense remain. After this week, the Heat are in the bottom 10 offensively, and counting on the addition of Terry Rozier from the Charlotte Hornets, they now have 9 players with 100-plus minutes and a below-average true shooting percentage. The Indiana Pacers at 13th with the record of 27-22, previously 12, so they go down a spot. Tyrese Halliburton has been back for 2 games, and they happen to be on the road and against 2 of the East's best teams, the Celtics and Knicks. So maybe it's not all that surprising that the Pacers close out the week with back-to-back losses and are now 3-5 since Pascal Siakam entered the rotation. it's going to take some time for these two stars to figure out how to really play off each other, especially with Halliburton coming back from an injury and being on a minutes restriction at the moment. Siakam is averaging over 5 assists a game as a Pacer, and he looks ready to impose more of his will on offense. Next up, I would say a bit of a surprising team, the New Orleans Pelicans at 27 and 21, although they did go down 2 spots as they cracked the top 10 previously. They have a net rating of plus 3.9. Back in mid-January, it looked like the New Orleans Pelicans might be able to make a push for home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs. There may still be time for that, but they're now 4-6 in their last 10 after dropping 3 games this past week, and their lone win came on Wednesday against the Houston Rockets in a game that Zion Williamson missed. Over the first 4-plus years of his career, New Orleans was plus 3.7 points per 100 possessions with the 23-year-old on the floor and minus 2.6 with him off. This season, the trend has reversed as they are plus 1.6 with him and plus 6.2 without him. The change could be the result of multiple factors, including coach Willie Green's rotation, but it might also be further evidence of a muted impact brought on by a decline in explosiveness. There are still games when Williamson looks like the force of nature that he was at Duke and during his first couple NBA seasons, but there are also protracted runs in which he doesn't appear to be launching off the floor or moving side to side quite like he used to. To make that push for a top 4 seed, they probably need that athleticism back from Zion Fried Chicken Williamson. The Sacramento Kings, one of the biggest surprises in the NBA as well, at 27 and 19, are in the 11th spot, so they move up 3 spots. They have a net rating of plus 0.7. They ended their week with a loss to the Miami Heat, which snapped their aforementioned losing streak. But the Kings had won 4 straight, including 3 on the road prior to Wednesday's game. And the general trajectory of second-year forward Keegan Murray continues to be encouraging. The 23-year-old had a slow start, shooting 28.7% from 3 over his first 13 appearances before missing 4 games with an injury. Since he returned from those absences, he's averaging 17.5 points and 2.6 threes while shooting 41.5% from 3 over 29 games. We have now hit the top 10. The Philadelphia 76ers are 10 at 30 and 17, and that rating of positive 6.5, but they have moved down 6 spots. It has been a tough week for the Sixers, who lost Joel Embiid to a meniscus injury during Tuesday's loss to the Warriors. This slide on the rankings is obviously a reflection of Embiid's anticipated absence. Philly's net rating is significantly worse without him, obviously, but Tyrese Maxey gave Sixers fans reason for hope in Thursday's win over the Utah Jazz. On the road, the 23-year-old dropped a career-high 51 points in the Sixers' win, a tight win. Next up, the Cleveland Cavaliers at 30 and 16. They were previously 11, so they're up 2 spots. Net rating of positive 4.5. They had to scratch and claw against the pesky Memphis Grizzlies for their most recent win, but they stayed red-hot this week. After going 4-0 since the last edition of my power rankings, they are now 12-1 in their last 13. And even with Darius Garland and Evan Mobley finally back in the lineup, it looks like Donovan Mitchell may continue to operate as the de facto point guard. For years with the Utah Jazz, it felt like Mitchell's ultimate ceiling would be reached at the 1. After all, he's only 6'3". And during Garland's extended absence, he's put up 28 points, 8 assists, and 3.3 threes a game. Next up, the surging New York Knicks, who are at 32-17. The OG Anunoby trade has worked out so well for them. They were previously ranked 9th, so they move up a spot. And that rating of positive 6.3. They are surging. They're up to 4th in the NBA in net rating, 6th in defense, 7th on offense. They've won 9 straight and 15 of 17. And they're suddenly within a game of the Milwaukee Bucks for 2nd place in the East. And while recently announced All-Stars Jalen Brunson and Julius Randle deserve much of the credit for this run, a Danto DiVincenzo breakout feels like it could be the real game changer. The two stars are sort of doing what's expected of them after last season. If DiVincenzo keeps playing like a fringe star, as he's averaging 19.5 points, 4.5 threes, and 3 assists while shooting 40% from 3 over his last 8 games, the Knicks are going to be one of the toughest and best teams in the Eastern Conference. Next up, the Phoenix Suns at 28-20, previously ranked 8th, so they move up a spot. They have a net rating of positive 2.6. The Phoenix Suns' big 3, or various pieces of it, has understandably been the subject of most of the talk and buzz around the team this season, but their ceiling, I think, will have a direct dependency to their supporting cast, and the other two members of Phoenix's now seemingly healthy starting 5 are having very underappreciated seasons. After going for 28 points, 11 rebounds, and 6 assists in Wednesday's win over the Brooklyn Nets, Yusuf Nurkic is now averaging 12 points, 10.3 rebounds, and 3.5 assists on the season. When he's on the floor, the Suns are plus 8.9 points per 100 possessions compared to minus 4.7 when he's off. And even though he missed Wednesday's game with an ankle injury, Grayson Allen is averaging over 13 points and almost three threes a game while posting an otherworldly 69.9 true shooting percentage. No one in the league matches or exceeds all three of those marks, and no one's even close. Milwaukee Bucks at 32-16, previously fifth, so they move up. They move down a spot. Net rating of positive 3.7. The Milwaukee Bucks loss to the Denver Nuggets in Ball Arena Monday was not concerning. They kept the game close, and they held the reigning champions to an offensive rating well below their season-long mark. Moving to 0-2 under new coach Doc Rivers, thanks to a loss to the aforementioned Blazers, has to at least raise some eyebrows. No, we shouldn't expect a dramatic transformation within Rivers' first week on the job. But still, they surrendered 119 points to a team with the league's 29th-ranked offense. Its perimeter defense struggled to contain Anthony Simons, Malcolm Brogdon, and on a few possessions, even Scoot Henderson. And all three reserves who played at least 10 minutes, Jay Crowder, Bobby Portis, and Pat Connaughton, were all minus 10 or worse for the night. So that needs to change. Next up, the Minnesota Timberwolves at 34-14. They swapped spots with the Milwaukee Bucks. As they were previously six, they move up one. Net rating of positive 5.8. They came back to earth a bit in January, going 10-7 and posting a bottom half of the league offensive rating. However, they still emerged from the month in first place in the West, thanks in large part to Rudy Gobert and the league best defense that he anchors. He was plus 18 in a blowout win over the Luka Doncic-less Mavs on Wednesday. On the season, the Wolves are now plus 9.7 points per 100 possession with him on the floor and negative 0.5 when he's off. With Gobert patrolling the paint and often surrounded by a ton of positional size from Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, and Karl-Anthony Towns, Minnesota continues to present one of the league's biggest challenges for opposing attacks. Next up, the defending NBA champion Denver Nuggets at 33-16, previously 7th, so they move up 3 spots, and they have a net rating of positive 4.3. The Denver Nuggets lost to the Oklahoma City Thunder on Wednesday, but Nikola Jokic missed that game and low back soreness, and Aaron Gordon did a solid impression of the two-time MVP in his absence. Gordon was plus 7 in the 5-point loss, and he finished with a well-rounded 16 points, 13 rebounds, 7 assists, and 4 blocks. It was a good reminder of how tough Denver can be when he's playing center. And after his minutes as a backup 5 during the 2023 playoffs contributed to an NBA championship, you can bet that coach Michael Malone will be playing that card again in April, May, and potentially June as well. Next up, the Oklahoma City Thunder at 33-15. They hold strong at the number 3 spot with a net rating of positive 7.8, the highest net rating we've seen so far. They dropped 2 games in the middle of the week, including a truly terrible loss to the tanking Detroit Pistons. But they got back on track against the aforementioned Nikola Jokic-less Denver Nuggets on Wednesday behind 34 points from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. The All-Star guard is now averaging 31.3 points, 6.4 assists, and a league-leading 2.2 steals a game. And his pace and playing time adjusted numbers put up a fight against Jokic's in a blind comparison. Very, very impressive. If SGA keeps this up and leads the second youngest roster in the league to first place in the West, where they're currently projected to finish, there will be a loud and probably justified contingent pushing for him to win the MVP, especially if Joel Embiid fails to qualify for the award. In the number 2 spot, still number 2, maintaining that spot, the surging Los Angeles Clippers with a record of 31-15 and a net rating of positive 6.2. The Clippers dropped the game against the Red Hot Cleveland Cavaliers on Monday, but that doesn't really cloud the fact that they've been on a tear in their own right. They followed up that loss with an easy win over the Wizards and are now 14-3 in their last 17. That is elite. And if Kawhi Leonard wasn't already making a pretty strong push to get back onto an All-NBA team for the first time since 2020-21, this run has to have him in the conversation at least. During the aforementioned stretch, he's averaging 23.1 points, 7 rebounds, 4.1 assists, 2.1 steals, 2 threes, and 1.3 blocks a game while shooting 46.2% from 3-point range. Very impressive. While those numbers might not look quite as gaudy as some of the others we're getting during this, you know, league-wide offensive explosion, they're almost spectacular for someone who has to share touches with Paul George, James Harden, and Russell Westbrook. And when you settle in to watch a Clippers game, you can catch Leonard looking like the dominant Terminator-like version of himself that he was in 2019 when he won an NBA championship in his only season with the Toronto Raptors. And number one, despite losing to the Lakers, the team with the highest net rating in the NBA, consistently number one this season, the Boston Celtics, at 37-12 with a net rating of positive 9.1. After starting the season 20-0 at home, the Celtics are suddenly 22-3 in the friendly confines of the TD Garden. And while the first two losses probably shouldn't alarm anyone, they were the Nuggets and Clippers, you know, both NBA championship contenders. Losing to the Lakers without LeBron James and Anthony Davis is bad. It's potentially worst loss of the season, bad for the Celtics, and it may be another reminder that Boston should be at least a little more willing to adjust on the fly when things are not quite going their way. The Celtics' 42.7 three-point attempts a game lead the NBA. On Thursday, they took 48 and posted a below-average three-point shooting percentage while only attempting 7 free throws. Over the course of the season and most seven-game series, the math is eventually going to work for Boston's three-heavy attack, but occasional departures from that strategy are warranted. Here is the stat of the week. Last season, this space was used semi-regularly to keep track of total 40-point performances. By the end of 22-23, the NBA had totaled 203 such games, a mark that smashed the old record of 142 set in the 1961-62 season. After Luka Doncic and Devin Booker both eclipsed 60 this week, maybe it's time to keep an eye on that total. Those two, Joel Embiid and Karl-Anthony Towns, and Giannis Antetokounmpo have all gotten there in 2023-24, and the total of 5 is already the third most in any season in the history of the NBA. There's almost no chance today's players will get to the 17 that the league totaled in 1961-62, mostly because Will Chamberlain accounted for 15 by himself, but the 1962-63 total of 9 is well within reach. So the NBA power rankings took over 26 minutes, but you gotta love it. And with that said, we are now transitioning to WWE. Former WWE Chairman and CEO Vince McMahon is reportedly under federal investigation because of the sexual assault and sex trafficking allegations that have been thrown against him. According to the Wall Street Journal, federal authorities have been in contact, quote, in recent months with women who alleged that they were victims of McMahon's sexual misconduct. The news comes 1 week after former WWE staffer Janelle Grant filed a lawsuit against McMahon, former company executive John Laurinaitis, and WWE, in which she alleged that McMahon sexually abused her and trafficked her to other men within the WWE. Although McMahon has claimed innocence, he resigned last week from his position as executive chairman of TKO, which is the company formed by the merger of WWE and UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Per the Wall Street Journal, the investigation began in 2022, and last summer McMahon received a grand jury subpoena in which communications between McMahon and Grant, as well as other women, were requested. Federal agents also executed a search warrant for McMahon's phone this past summer. He reportedly paid $14.6 million to multiple women in exchange for their signing non-disclosure agreements that would prevent them from speaking publicly on their sexual relationships with McMahon, and in some cases, allegations of sexual misconduct. As part of her lawsuit, Grant alleged that McMahon agreed to pay her $3 million if she signed an NDA, but he stopped payments after giving her only $1 million. Grant alleged that after meeting McMahon in 2019, he gave her a job in WWE's legal department and subsequently forced her to engage in sex acts with him and others in the company. Grant alleged that McMahon sexually assaulted her on multiple occasions, as did Laurinaitis. She also alleged in the lawsuit that McMahon sent sexually explicit videos of her to a wrestler during contract negotiations. The wrestler was not named, but they were referred to as both a WWE and UFC star, and the Wall Street Journal reported that she was referring to none other than the Beast Incarnate, Brock Lesnar. McMahon insisted last week in a statement that Grant's allegations against him are false, saying, "I intend to vigorously defend myself against these baseless accusations and look forward to clearing my name." So hopefully that is true. With that said, we are now going to look at my NBA trade big board. NBA teams have less than 1 week remaining to finalize their shopping ahead of the deadline, so here we go. Number 10, Daniel Gafford from the Washington Wizards. We'll know whether the Wizards are clearing house or not depending on how they handle Daniel Gafford. He's only 25. He turned 25 in October, so he's young enough to keep even though, you know, you're in a rebuild. He's also very affordable on a three-year contract for $40.2 million. They have no obvious incentive to trade him beyond cashing in on his value. Yet with several teams on the hunt for front court depth, like the Mavericks, Rockets, and Knicks, they all have interest in Gafford. So here's a trade idea. Gafford and Corey Kispert would go to the Pelicans in exchange for Jonas Valanciunas and Dyson Daniels. The Pelicans have poked around for a new center, as Valanciunas is neither the shot blocker nor the floor spacer who would fit best alongside Zion Williamson. Gafford may not have any shooting ability or range, but his bounce and length make him a real deterrent around the rim. Kispert is a career supplier of 2.7 threes per 36 minutes on 38.4% shooting. He would help address the Pelicans' need for volume shooting. The Wizards would primarily pounce on this package for Daniels, who is a 20-year-old ready contributing to a winning team as a two-way playmaker. He's limited as a scorer, but Washington has the time to wait and see if he can minimize some of his shortcomings. Next up, Zach LaVine of the Chicago Bulls. He may have been the early season favorite for the most likely notable name to change teams. With minimal noise from his trade market, though, it's increasingly possible that he'll stay in Chicago through at least this offseason. Despite his all-star past and typically very good offensive numbers, he has seemingly scared off all suitors with his injury issues and the massive amount of money that he's still owed, which is $138 million after this season. But a trade idea is Zach LaVine to the Detroit Pistons for Bojan Bogdanovic, James Wiseman, and a 2029 first-round pick, which is top five protected. The Pistons and Bulls have discussed a LaVine trade per The Athletic. Detroit is a strange landing spot for LaVine at first glance, but the Pistons definitely need scoring and shooting, and they may want to see how Cade Cunningham and the rest of their young core would benefit from having a bona fide go-to scorer. Chicago's ask from Detroit so far per Edwards has been a package including Bojan Bogdanovic and one of Detroit's blue chippers. The latter refers to Cunningham, Jalen Duren, Ozer Thompson, and Jaden Ivey, none of whom the Bulls are likely to receive for an overpaid, often injured LaVine. This feels more reasonable with Chicago still getting the sweet shooting Bogdanovic, plus a lightly protected future first, and Wiseman, who is a 22-year-old, it's crazy that he's still only 22, 7-footer with a lot more bounce than any of the Bulls' bigs. Next up, the aforementioned Bojan Bogdanovic. The Pistons keep signaling that they are in zero rush to trade Bogdanovic, and that's probably true. His scoring and shot-making relieve some of the burden on their young players, and his $19 million salary for next season, which is only partially guaranteed, is a reasonable pay rate for someone who produces like this, over 20 points, 3 threes, and 47% shooting, 41.4 from 3. If a shortage of sellers helps drive up Bogdanovic's trade value, there's almost certainly a deal to be made. The Pistons aren't necessarily actively shopping him, but they are listening to offers per The Athletic. So here's another trade involving Bogdanovic. He would go to the Orlando Magic for Jet Howard, Joe Ingles, and a 2025 first-round pick, which is top five protected via the Nuggets. While the Magic are clearly a team on the rise, there's a cap on how high they can climb without fixing their 24th-ranked offense. Their three-point shooting is abysmal, and they need more support scoring around Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner. Bogdanovic would check both boxes without putting too much of a dent into the club's asset collection. If Detroit deals Bogdanovic, this is the kind of future-focused package that the Pistons should be trying to get. Quentin Grimes of the Knicks. Quentin Grimes appeared to be on his way to earning building block status in the Big Apple not too long ago, but it suddenly seems like he could be on the way out. His role has been reduced in his third season, and all of his numbers have declined along with it. All three levels of his shooting slash are down from last season. They've discussed Grimes' deals with the Jazz and Hawks per Hoops Hype, and that may only be the proverbial tip of the iceberg when it comes to teams interested in Grimes. He's only 23 years old. He could be a very solid 3-and-D guy for a title contender. A trade idea is Quentin Grimes, Evan Fournier, and a top 10 protected 2024 first-round pick to the Utah Jazz for Jordan Clarkson. While the Jazz have bounced back from a choppy 7-16 start to play their way back into play-in tournament position, they could still wind up prioritizing the future at the deadline. If that's the route that they decide to take, Grimes is exactly the kind of player they should be going after, especially if he's paired with a first-round pick. Utah's interest in Fournier would start and stop at his $18.9 million salary. The Knicks, meanwhile, would be getting back the scoring punch and shot creation that their second unit lost when they had to give up Emmanuel quickly in the OG Anunoby trade. Clarkson is a previous Sixth Man of the Year award winner, and he's once again supplying instant offense in the form of his 18 points and 5 assists in 30 minutes a game. Jeremy Grant of the Blazers. The Blazers might be in the early stages of their post-Damian Lillard rebuild, but they aren't interested in an everything-must-go kind of liquidation. In fact, rival teams have described Portland as being resistant to the notion of trading forward Jeremy Grant, per Mark Stein. Portland clearly values what Grant offers both on the court and in the locker room as well. That shouldn't stop this team from sending him packing at the proverbial right price. He's built to help a contender win. Excuse me. No edits on my show. He's built to help a contender win right now, and the Blazers obviously are not ready for that. Their financial future would be much easier to navigate if they got out from under the 5-year, $160 million pact that he signed over the offseason. A trade idea is Jeremy Grant to the Golden State Warriors for Andrew Wiggins and Moses Moody. While the Warriors' season might be slipping away, they seem unlikely to wave the white flag for as long as Stephen Curry is around. If they are aiming to upgrade the roster, this deal could work. Grant is essentially the version of Wiggins that Golden State always hopes will show up, but seldom sees anymore. Or nowadays, I should say. Grant could be the second scoring option behind Steph Curry and a valuable piece of its switch-heavy defense. As for Portland, Wiggins is a slightly younger and a decent amount cheaper than Grant, and when both players are in a groove, there isn't a lot of difference between them. So the Blazers might be shipping out Grant for a more cost-effective version of himself, while also adding Moody, who is a 21-year-old that has flashed serious 3 and D chops when given an opportunity to play. Also from the Blazers, Malcolm Brogdon. His tenure in Portland almost assuredly won't be a long one. Beyond being a 31-year-old veteran on a rebuilding team, the combo guard also shares a position with some of the Blazers' most important players, Scoot Henderson and Anfernee Simons. Portland will likely need to make a business decision to deal Brogdon sooner than later, but it's perhaps notable that he's not pushing for a deadline deal, saying that he's happy here. I'm valued here, valued in this leadership / lead guard role. Of course, I'm sure they're looking at their options, but for me, it's all about using every opportunity to play good basketball and help this team win. A trade idea is Malcolm Brogdon to the Philadelphia 76ers for Marcus Morris Sr., KJ Martin, Jaden Springer, and a 2026 first-round pick via the Thunder, Rockets, or Clippers. The Sixers are one of the few contenders with enough trade chips to add an impact player, and Brogdon would certainly fit the bill. His ability to play on or off the ball would make him an easy fit for this roster, since he can share the floor with Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid or keep the offense humming without them. Brogdon also has 43 playoff games under his belt in experience, so he won't be bothered by the bright lights or the potential pressure of playoff basketball. For Portland, a Brogdon deal is a way to both clear the runway for its young guards and brighten the long-term outlook of this team. Between Martin, Springer, and the pick, the Blazers could reasonably hope to collect at least 2 keepers in this deal. Morris, meanwhile, would be a money matcher and a possible buyout candidate. Bruce Brown of the Toronto Raptors. Win now shoppers don't need to ask themselves whether Bruce Brown can fill a critical role for a championship team. That's exactly how he spent the 2022-23 season on the NBA champion Denver Nuggets. It should come as no surprise then to hear that there's lots of interest in the do-it-all swingman. The Raptors are aiming to get a first-round pick as the centerpiece of any exchange involving Brown. An idea is Bruce Brown in the Knicks for Quentin Grimes, Evan Fournier, and a 2024 first-round pick, which is top 10 protected via the Mavs. Brown is a unique player, and in his mind, at least a perfect fit with coach Tom Thibodeau, and he would offer a unique solution to some of the Knicks' issues. Brown can pick up some of the playmaking slack left behind by Emmanuel Quickly's subtraction, plus Brown could soak up minutes on this injury-riddled front court. The Knicks had significant interest in signing Brown in last summer. By flipping Brown, the Raptors would essentially be increasing their return from the Pascal Siakam trade that already netted them 3 first-round picks. They would add a 4th pick to the pile here, plus they'd get a potential keeper in Grimes, an easy-on-paper fit with Scottie Barnes and his former teammates Emmanuel Quickly and RJ Barrett. Fournier would merely make the money work. DeMar DeRozan from the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls have kept quiet the past 2 trade deadlines, and they just might extend that streak to 3 years. The Athletic reported few in or around the organization anticipate the franchise making a major move, or even if a deal does get done, there's a prevailing belief that the front office won't commit to something substantial. That might just be a reflection of the market, though, or perhaps even an attempt to generate some leverage. The Bulls are headed nowhere fast, and DeMar DeRozan is a 34-year-old on an expiring contract, so he's about as clear-cut of a trade candidate as you can get. Here's an interesting trade idea. DeMar DeRozan and Andre Drummond to the Houston Rockets for Jayshon Tate, Jeff Green, Jock Landale, Boban Marjanovic, a 2024 first-round pick, top 3 protected via the Nets, and a 2024 second-round pick and 2025 second-round pick. If the Rockets want to compete for at least a play-in spot, they might have to make a move that breathes some life back into them, which has lost 13 of the last 20 games. This deal could do just that. DeRozan's shot-making and secondary creation would be a huge boost for Houston's 21st-ranked offense. While Houston just acquired Steven Adams, he is shelved for the season by knee surgery, so renting Drummond could temporarily take care of the need for size and depth in the front court. And for the Bulls, it's just a rebuilding trade. Kyle Kuzma of the Wizards. Washington has a chance to further the rebuilding efforts that they started with the summer subtractions of Bradley Beal and Kristaps Porzingis. The Wizards essentially have a roster full of trade candidates. Rookie lottery pick Bilal Coulibaly is their lone untouchable, but Kyle Kuzma would command the biggest return. Word around the league is Washington seeks 2 first-round picks for Kuzma. Here's an idea. Kyle Kuzma to the 76ers for Marcus Morris Sr., Robert Covington, Jaden Springer, a 2028 first-round pick via the Clippers, a 2024 second-round pick via the Knicks, and a 2027 second-round pick. Kuzma might not be a perfect fit in Philly necessarily, but he's about as close to a difference maker that the Sixers are going to find in this market. He could perk up the offense with isolation scoring, improving playmaking, and a pinch of outside shooting, operating as either the third option or in a 3A to 3B setup with Tobias Harris. The Sixers would also walk away with an all-purpose perimeter stopper in Wright, who could handle some initiating duties when Tyrese Maxey takes a seat. While the Wizards don't get their 2 first-round picks, they do get a valuable and unprotected future first, a pair of second-rounders, and a 21-year-old recent first-round pick in Springer, who went number 28 in 2021. Covington and Morris would be involved for money-matching purposes only, But if the deal was completed sooner rather than later, Washington could try flipping either one for additional draft assets as well. And lastly, DeJounte Murray of the Atlanta Hawks. The closer the deadline gets, the clearer it becomes that DeJounte Murray is the best player on the market, but perhaps he's too good for the Hawks to let go. Coach Quinn Snyder has lobbied the team to not trade him away, per NBA insider Mark Stein. Snyder's plea feels unlikely to take Murray off the board outright. Since teaming up with Trae Young, the pair has posted a minus 1.8 net rating across their 2,562 minutes of floor time per PBP stats. It's hard to imagine the front office feels more time is needed to make an assessment of this twosome. Plus, in this limited trade market, Murray could and should command a premium. He remains the top priority for the Los Angeles Lakers per The Athletic, and it stands to reason that that most other shoppers in the market are, you know, feel the same way as well. Here's a crazy trade. DeJounte Murray and AJ Griffin to the Los Angeles Lakers, Spencer Dinwiddie, Jalen Hood-Schifino, Max Christie, and a 2029 first-round pick via the Lakers to the Atlanta Hawks, D'Angelo Russell, a 2024 second-round pick via the Clippers, and a 2025 second-round pick also via the Clippers to the Brooklyn Nets. So D'Angelo Russell in this trade would become a two-time Brooklyn Net after being a two-time Los Angeles Laker. The Lakers are Murray's likeliest landing spot, provided that they can ever find a third team willing to take on D'Angelo Russell, who clearly is not wanted by the Atlanta Hawks. The Nets could be willing to do that since they'd be getting a cheap price on a 27-year-old who previously booked an all-star trip with them, plus a pair of second-round picks as well. LA, meanwhile, would get an overdue energy burst with this trade, not to mention the additional shot creation ability to pressure the rim and point of attack defense that the roster badly needs. If Murray's shooting holds up, as he's averaging 2.3 three-pointers on 38.3% shooting, he'd be an easy fit alongside LeBron James and Anthony Davis. The Lakers would also get Griffin and a chance to help the 20-year-old discover his 3-and-D form. While Atlanta only nabs a single first-round pick here, it is an unprotected future first from a franchise with myriad long-term questions hovering over it. Plus, Hood-Schifino was a top 20 pick last summer, and Christie was the 35th selection the offseason prior, so the Hawks would hope to have a couple of building blocks coming out of this deal. Dinwiddie would offer financial relief in the form of his expiring $18.9 million salary. So that is my NBA trade big board, and we are, you know, in the blink of an eye at over 40 minutes into this episode. We're going to talk about some hockey. Todd McLellan is out as head coach of the Los Angeles Kings, the franchise announced on Friday. Jim Hiller has been named interim head coach for the remainder of the 2023-24 season. Kings vice president and general manager Rob Blake said in a statement, "We want to thank Todd for his hard work and dedication to the organization. He has done a tremendous job in moving us forward and making a positive impact on our group and in our community. This was not an easy decision, but we felt the change was necessary at this time. Jim is a well-respected member of our staff who is familiar with our players. We are confident in his ability to lead our team effectively during this pivotal time." The Kings are currently fourth in the Pacific Division with a record of 23-15-10, but they've experienced an absolutely massive decline in performance dating back to December, having lost 14 of 17 entering All-Star Weekend. Some of those losses have come against the worst teams in the NHL, in the San Jose Sharks and Buffalo Sabres. With the coaching change coming at the All-Star break, the Kings are hoping players will come back refreshed and ready to win under a new bench boss. The team's first game back is February the 10th against the Edmonton Oilers. McLellan had been the head coach of the Kings since the 2019-20 season. He led the franchise to a record of 164-130-44 and two playoff appearances in his 4.5 seasons at the helm. Both were first-round losses at the hands of the aforementioned Edmonton Oilers. McLellan got his first NHL head coaching job in 2008 with the San Jose Sharks. He spent seven seasons in San Jose, leading the franchise to a record of 311-163-66, recording six playoff appearances in his tenure. One of them was to the Stanley Cup final. Following his stint with the Sharks, he became head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, spending four seasons with the franchise between 2015 and 2019. He led the team to a very mid record of 123-119-24 and a playoff appearance in the 2016-17 season. Hiller, meanwhile, joined the Kings in July 2022, and he has spent the last two seasons as an assistant. He previously served as an assistant for the New York Islanders, Toronto Maple Leafs, and Detroit Red Wings. We are now going to transition to the first NFL story of this episode, a far cry from, you know, how it's been going recently on the show, where it's all NFL. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers' Mike Evans could become one of the NFL's highest-paid wide receivers with his next contract. Evans is expected to earn an annual salary of somewhere between $25 and $30 million in 2024, according to the Houston Chronicle. The Philadelphia Eagles' A.J. Brown, Los Angeles Rams' Cooper Kupp, and Las Vegas Raiders' Devontae Adams, and Miami Dolphins' Tyreek Hill are the only wide receivers currently earning annual salaries in that range. Evans led the Buccaneers to the playoffs with his 10th consecutive 1,000-yard season in 2023. Having completed the final season of the five-year, $16.5 million AAV contract that he signed with the Bucs in 2018, he is now going to be a free agent in March. He's 30 years old. He's received interest from other teams before the 2023 season. Quote, my understanding is several teams tried to trade for him before the season. Ian Rappaport said on a January 21st episode of NFL Game Day, he wanted an extension. The Bucs were not ready to go there yet. The Buccaneers and Evans haggled over the extension for 2 years, but were not able to reach a compromise, according to ESPN. Evans prioritized guarantees over the length of the deal. That was believed to be a problem for Buccaneers ownership group that was strapped for salary after borrowing almost $100 million to pay quarterback Tom Brady, former quarterback Tom Brady, from 2020 to 2022. Evans has collected about $110 million from the Buccaneers since 2014, according to Rappaport, making him the highest paid player in the history of the franchise. The wide receiver made it to the 1,000-yard mark in an explosive Week 13 win over the Carolina Panthers. The win marked his 13th career game with 150-plus yards and his 26th with at least 100 yards. That game made Evans the first player in NFL history to start his career with 10 consecutive quadruple-digit receiving yardage totals. He's now just 1 year away from tying the record set by Hall of Famer Jerry Rice, who recorded 11 straight 1,000-yard seasons between 1986 and 1996. So Mike Evans will certainly get paid. If the Buccaneers are smart, they will keep him around. I'm not exactly sure. Why they would want him out. But we got more NFL to talk about. Miami Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa believes that he will land a contract extension with his team this offseason, saying, quote, I believe that will happen, but I'm going to let my agents, going to let, you know, Chris Greer, Mike McDaniel, let those guys talk about that and let them move forward accordingly, Tagovailoa said, or he told this to Adam Beasley of Pro Football Network before the Pro Bowl practice. Tagovailoa, the AFC starting quarterback in this year's Pro Bowl flag football game, also told ESPN that there's been talks between the two sides, saying there's been communication. I think the thing with that right now is I'm just letting the team talk to my agent and let them work that out. As of now, he has 1 year deal left on his rookie deal that the Dolphins exercised after the Dolphins exercised his fifth year option in 2023. Miami could conceivably let Tua's rookie contract play out and place the franchise tag on him in 2025 and 2026 as well. But it's clear that both sides want something long-term done and completed. Quote, so the goal is to have him here long-term playing at a high level, Dolphins GM Chris Greer told reporters in part during his end-of-season press conference. That's always the goal, and we'll continue to communicate with him through the offseason here. He's enjoyed great success in the past 2 years under head coach Mike McDaniel. In 2022, the former Alabama star led the NFL in yards per attempt and quarterback rating. In 2023, his 4,624 passing yards were number one in the NFL, and Miami finished the season with 496 points, which was second in the NFL. So they should definitely keep Tua around. Speaking of keeping them around, we got more hockey to talk about, motherfuckers. The Arizona Coyotes confirmed a report from Taylor Rocha of ABC 15 Arizona that the team is moving forward on a plan to purchase land in North Phoenix to build a new arena. Earlier in the day, the Coyotes stated that they were, quote, fully committed to Arizona, calling the state home in response to Commissioner Gary Bettman's public hope that majority owner Alex Morello would deliver on his promise to bring an NHL-quality arena to the state. The Coyotes currently call Arizona State's 5,000-seat Mullet Arena as their home. Obviously, that is not any kind of long-term solution for the franchise, which moved there after the city of Glendale, Arizona, that is, ceased its operating agreement with the team to play at its old home, the Gila River Arena. Needless to say, it's been a long and arduous arena path for the Coyotes since the then-Jets moved from Winnipeg in 1996 to the point where the Arizona Republic coined the period, quote, 25 years of arena drama. But now it appears the Coyotes could finally be, you know, on the path of a new home. Speaking of the path, let's talk about Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield appears to be comfortable with Liam Cohen as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers' preferred choice to replace Dave Canales as offensive coordinator. Per The Athletic, Mayfield and the Buccaneers are expected to pursue a new contract this offseason, as the veteran quarterback also prepares to enter free agency alongside his wide receiver Mike Evans. Earlier this week, Mayfield told NFL Network that his decision to remain with the Buccaneers kind of depends on who the team hired to replace Canales. So, Cohen spent this season as Kentucky's offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach. He worked with Mayfield actually previously during the 2022 season when they were with the Los Angeles Rams. He was the team's offensive coordinator, and Baker Mayfield started their final four games of the season after being claimed off waivers. So that is the update on Baker Mayfield and where he is at. Let's transition now to some boxing. Shall we? There is a new date for the highly anticipated showdown between Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk. It was revealed Saturday that the bout for the undisputed WBA, WBC, IBF, and WBO heavyweight world titles was rescheduled to take place on May 18th. It was also announced on Saturday that Artur Beterbiev and Dmitry Bivol will square off for the undisputed light heavyweight title on June 1st. This is not the first time that the fight has been rescheduled, as it was pushed back from December 23rd to February 17th to allow Fury more time to recover following a much closer than expected fight against former UFC heavyweight champion Francis Le Predateur Ngannou. Ngannou even dropped Fury at one point. As for the latest rescheduling, Queensbury Promotions released a statement on Friday revealing that Fury suffered a free cut above his eye during a sparring session that required urgent medical attention and significant stitching. Pushing the fight back to May allows him more time to recover from that cut, obviously. Quote, I'm absolutely devastated after preparing for this fight for so long and being in such superb condition. I feel bad for everyone involved in this huge event, and I will work diligently towards the rescheduled date once the eye has healed. Filip Hrgović told Mike Coppinger of ESPN that he wanted to step in for Fury and fight Usyk on February 17th following the injury. Coppinger even reported that such an option was being explored before Saturday's announcement of the rescheduled date. While that would have been an intriguing matchup, it would not receive nearly as much hype and attention and have as much at stake as Fury versus Usyk. CNN noted that the winner will become the first undisputed heavyweight champion since Lennox Lewis reached such heights in 1999. Fury is 34-0-1. His lone draw was against Deontay Wilder in the first fight in their trilogy. Fury also has 24 knockouts out of 34 wins. Usyk is also undefeated at 21-0 with 14 knockouts. Usyk is an Olympic gold medalist, the former undisputed cruiserweight world champion, but Fury is the lineal champion as he beat Vladimir Klitschko. That is a mythical title that is simply defined as the man who beat the man who beat the man going back through history. Usyk, like I said, was a 2012 Olympic gold medalist. He last fought in August when he defeated Daniel Dubois via knockout, and will be looking for a similar result come May against Fury. With that, let us now transition to some baseball. Los Angeles Dodgers fans are not going to have to wait long to see new signing Shohei Ohtani this season. He said he is, quote, very confident that he will be the designated hitter for the Dodgers when they take the field for opening day against the San Diego Padres on March 20th in South Korea, per ESPN. While he is recovering from elbow surgery, he said he's also on schedule with his rehab for a season that will see him hit but not pitch. Los Angeles' ability to add Ohtani was the biggest move of the entire offseason, no doubt, as his resume includes a Rookie of the Year, two American League MVPs, which would have been three straight had Aaron Judge not hit 62 homers in 2022, two Silver Sluggers, and three All-Star selections. Much of his value comes from his ability to anchor his team's pitching staff and lineup as someone who can pitch and hit at an elite level, but he will not be able to do both in 2024. He will not be able to pitch because of his surgery. Fortunately for the Dodgers, he will be under contract for the next 10 years after signing a significant deal. So Ohtani will be ready. Let's see, what do we got next? Let's transition back to the NBA. This is, I'm sure, controversial. Milwaukee Bucks head coach Doc Rivers told NBA insider Mark Stein that he plans on giving his All-Star Game ring and bonus to Adrian Griffin. The Bucks coaching staff will coach the Eastern Conference All-Stars, the league announced on Saturday night. Griffin served as Milwaukee's head coach throughout the first 44 games of the season, helping guide the team to a respectable, very respectable record of 31-13. However, he was fired on January 23rd amid the Bucks' huge struggles on the defensive side of the ball. Prior to his firing, the Bucks owned a 116.8 defensive rating, which ranked number 21 in the NBA. It also represented the worst mark of any team with a winning record at the time and presented a huge issue for the Bucks as they, you know, gear up for a championship run. The Bucks announced that Rivers would be the next coach on January 26th. It was reported that the former coach of the year served as an informal consultant to Griffin during the season. Although Rivers denied the report on January 27th, he discussed the bond that he and Griffin shared, saying, quote, Adrian and I are good friends. He told us to Jack Maloney of CBS Sports. I talked to Adrian the last 3 days. I talked to him the night of the firing. I talked to him. We talk a lot. Listen, I wanted him to do well. I look at him as a guy that he's a lifer. And for 15 years, he was trying to get a job. And then he gets a job and it doesn't work out for him. So Doc Rivers will be coaching the 2024 NBA All-Star Game, the Eastern Conference. Let's talk about the World Cup, shall we? It will be in the United States in 2026. Clear your 2026 schedule. FIFA released details for the 2026 Men's World Cup during a Sunday broadcast on Fox, and the competition will start on June 11th of that year at Estadio Azteca in Mexico City. A champion will be crowned at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey on July 19th. With 48 teams in this edition of the event, there will be more games than in past years. One of those games will be the bronze medal match, which will take place in Miami's Hard Rock Stadium. The United States men's national team will hope to be playing in those later rounds, and it begins its World Cup journey on June 12th in Los Angeles. The squad plays another match in Seattle on June 19th before finishing the group stage back in Los Angeles on June 25th. What other matchups do we have in the World Cup, or dates, I should say? Canada starts in Toronto on June 12th before moving to Vancouver for the final two group stage games. What else? Six total matches in Philadelphia, but only one in the knockout stage. That's kind of a disappointment for the city, I have to admit. So the final is in New Jersey, nine matches for Dallas, which is more than any other city. The U.S. men's national team will play group matches in L.A., Seattle, and then back in L.A. The locations of the 104 matches at the 2026 FIFA World Cup in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico have been revealed. So the unique twist, again, is it is being hosted by three North American nations. As Joe Wright of Sporting News noted, 60 of the 80 games will take place in the United States, with 10 being held in Canada and 10 in Mexico as well. Mexico will be the first country to host three men's World Cups after previously doing so in 1970 and 1986. The United States, which hosted in 1994, will join Mexico, Brazil, Italy, France, and Germany as nations who have hosted the event multiple times. FIFA had already selected 16 total host venues, and they are AT&T Stadium in Dallas, MetLife Stadium in New York City, Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City, Missouri, NRG Stadium in Houston, Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles, Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia, Lumen Field in Seattle, Levi Stadium in San Francisco, Gillette Stadium in Boston, Hard Rock Stadium in Miami, Estadio Azteca in Mexico City, Estadio BBVA in Monterrey, Mexico, Estadio Akron in Guadalajara, Mexico, BMO Field in Toronto, Canada, and BC Place in Vancouver, Canada. The 2026 Men's FIFA World Cup follows the 2022 edition, which was held in Qatar. The final is one of the most thrilling soccer matches in history, with Lionel Messi and Argentina prevailing over Kylian Mbappe in France in penalties following a back-and-forth battle. Messi and Angel Di Maria each scored in the first half to put their side up 2-0, but Mbappe answered with back-to-back goals late in the second half to force extra time. Fittingly, both Mbappe and Messi scored in extra time before Argentina won 4-2 on penalties. It was the crowning moment in Messi's legendary, unforgettable, historic career, but there are sure to be unforgettable games and legacy-defining developments in the 2026 World Cup as well. We'll see if Messi and Ronaldo will be able to play in 2026. Let us now, let's just do some headlines now since we're running out of time. The deal with the Raiders fell through, so Cliff Kingsbury will become the new offensive coordinator of the Washington Commanders instead of the Las Vegas Raiders. Chris Finch was named the All-Star Game coach of the Western Conference. He's the first head coach of the Wolves in the All-Star Game since 2004. The Detroit Pistons are for some reason interested in Tobias Harris. Joel Embiid, or the Philadelphia 76ers, are hoping that Joel Embiid misses 1 to 2 months after his knee procedure. Bobby Witt Jr. gets a massive deal from the Kansas City Royals, 11 years, $288.8 million. Here is the top five men's college basketball poll. Number one is UConn, followed by Purdue at 2, UNC, North Carolina at 3, Kansas at 4, and Houston at 5. The Seattle Storm signed Aneka Ogwumike. She's an eight-time All-Star who left the Los Angeles Sparks. The Los Angeles Lakers are expecting that Jared Vanderbilt will be out for at least 3 to 4 weeks. We got about a minute left before this shit stops. The Milwaukee Bucks and Dallas Mavericks are talking a trade that would send Bobby Portis to Dallas and Grant Williams to Milwaukee. That is interesting. Nevada Teachers Union is suing the state of Nevada, and the governor is challenging legislation that paved the way for the venue's funding. The Philadelphia Eagles will host an NFL game in Brazil, in Sao Paulo. It will be the Friday night of the 2024 opening weekend. Jaylen Brown is eyeing the dunk contest. The 49ers will just deal with the bad field at UNLV in the Super Bowl. And Anthony Davis becomes the first player in Lakers history with 25 points, 15 rebounds, 10 assists on 75% shooting from the field. He also added 3 blocks as well. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is all we have for this episode of the Sean Sports Thought Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. This was a scintillating episode. I didn't even get to cover everything I wanted to cover just because the depth of the topics I did go over, like the NBA power rankings and my top 10 NBA trade deadline trade big board, you know, it took a while and took perhaps a little longer than expected, but that's okay. I love doing this shit. Thank you guys so much for listening. This was episode number 432. If you or someone you know has a small or medium-sized company that needs managed IT services, go to crimsonit.com. Tell them you found them from me, the Sean Sports Podcast. They'll give you a discount. With that said, thank you guys so much for listening. I appreciate you guys so much. I love doing this shit. Love you guys. Stay blessed.